Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Wednesday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap Today territory. And, of course, on behalf of Sam Rohr and Dave Kistler, I'm Gary Dahl. We have a guest with us today. His name is Ed Stevens, and, of course, Ed is involved with police work, and he's going to be talking just a little bit about what is going on in Baltimore from a policeman's perspective. I think that it's going to be very, very interesting to hear what he has to say, so we would encourage you to stay tuned to the radio there this afternoon. The Lord willing, Ed will be with us throughout the entire program and has a lot to say. Dave and Sam and I have had him on our previous program that we referred to as Freedom Focus. But he's with us today, and of course, I suppose over a period of time, he may be on the program from time to time, and so you'll get to know him. Loves the Lord, stands for Christ, even in the midst of what he has to do as a policeman in a major city in the United States of America today. Well, I suppose that most of you have been watching what's going on around the Supreme Court hearing yesterday. We don't know too much about it, but we do know that some of the justices have given some very, very interesting statements with regard to the hearing of the arguments concerning same-sex marriage. And with the information that we have before us right now, it seems like the Supreme Court justices are appearing to be sharply divided as these various arguments for gay marriages, gay marriage was given, and of course, as the whole process went on. In fact, Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's often seen as the swing vote, said gay marriage has been debated for only a decade, and wondered aloud whether scholars and the public need more time to debate this subject. He said marriage has been understood as one man and one woman for millennia plus time. And so, you know, his point is, are we ready to change it now? In fact, he says this. He said, it's very difficult for the court to say we know better. In other words, you know, what happened there is the fact that the attorney who is arguing in favor of same-sex marriage, basically emphasized that the court should know better, that things are changing in the world today, things are changing in the United States of America, and so it is time to stop discriminating against homosexuals and allow them to get married. It's interesting that Kennedy, in the course of arguments, posed skeptical questions on both sides, only adding to the uncertainty of how the Supreme Court may rule in this landmark case. So it's just interesting to see how it'll turn out. However, Chief Justice John Roberts said that gay couples seeking to marry are not seeking to join the institution of marriage, but rather, he said, you're seeking to change what the institution is. And Dave Kistler, I thought that was a brilliant statement because that's exactly what's going on.
Well, Gary, it is exactly what's going on. And as I listened to some of the arguments yesterday before the high court, I found them to be very, very interesting. It was, to be honest with you, it was quite encouraging. We talked about this just a little bit yesterday. But again, we don't want to read too much into these tea leaves. There, you know, the vote will come up on Friday. Friday, just after lunchtime, they will meet in seclusion and cast their ballots on this highly important issue, what I believe to be is the most important issue in our lifetime. So, Gary, when you listen to it, you're encouraged. At the same time, that does not always signal what these justices are going to do. But I will say this. I think you're 100% correct. I think there are four that are supportive of same-sex marriage, four that are solidly against it. And I do believe that Justice Kennedy is the swing vote. And, you know, depending on what he does will be most likely the outcome of this entire issue.
I thought this was rather interesting, Brother Sam. Justice Scalia said that the issue is not whether there should be same-sex marriage, but who should decide the point. And, of course, he expressed concern about the court imposing a requirement on the states. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. I'd assume that you'd probably agree with Scalia that the states should be the one considering this, not the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
Well, I do indeed, Gary. And that and another comment, I think even Justice Kennedy referenced that. And between the two, there was this discussion. The question came up is, do we as a court even have the right? Is it within our, they didn't use the word jurisdiction, but is it within our power to even change what has been in effect for 10,000 years, this matter, through civilizations of all time? And other than the Netherlands in 2001, when they went counter to this historic position, we say the biblical position, other than them, they ask one of the individuals speaking in favor of same-sex marriage, can you tell me one nation, other than the Netherlands, 2001, very recently, that have ever embraced or by government sanctioned two men and two women in marriage? And she said, well, no, I can't. And that's basically the point. So I think that point was very, very well made. It is a absolutely right point. It's been this way since the beginning of time, effectively. And who are we as a court, as a group of nine justices to sit here and to change that historic definition? If they deal just on that issue, Gary and Dave, they will come to the right conclusion. But Dave is right. We don't know, but I was very pleased with the types of questions that were asked, and we will need to continue to pray, certainly as they deliberate in these next few days.
Well, that's absolutely true. We need to pray. And, of course, all across the nation, there are pastors and others asking for prayer for the hearing yesterday. And, of course, that's very, very significant. It was very important. But let's not stop praying now, ladies and gentlemen, because between now and Friday are very, very, very crucial hours and days. Let's pray that the United States Supreme Court will stand on the side of biblical truth as well as on the side of constitutional truth. And we've talked a lot about this over the past three or four programs. But now we must pray and pray and pray and then watch God work. Well, in Baltimore, Maryland, they're really involved with a number of things down there that really are very, very concerning to all of us. And the thing that concerns me, folks, is that not only is this thing going to not only does it have the potential of excelling in the city of Baltimore, but it may also excel across the nation in other major cities if it's not properly dealt with down there. And it just seems as though the police are under attack. There are some police, I believe, who in some of these recent situations have made improper decisions. Other police have made right decisions, but they're being made out to be wicked people themselves. And so, you know, it's important that we come down with a balance on what is right and what is wrong. To help us sort through all of this, we'll be having a veteran policeman with us, Ed Stevens. We'll be talking more about this whole subject with him when we return. This is Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Gary Dahl. We'll be back with more right after this.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com. to protect your trees.
Hey, Grandma, I'm confused. We're reading an article the New York Times wrote in 1999 in my Common Core book about the fall of the Berlin Wall. Didn't you tell me Ronald Reagan was mostly responsible for the fall of the Soviet Union?
Well, yes, I did.
Well, right here in the article, it says Mikhail Gorbachev did that. When I told them I thought it was Ronald Reagan, my teacher said no, that he was a president then, but he was just a good salesman. It was Gorbachev who was the great reformer who transformed the world. Boy, I'm glad they talked about that, because I would have gotten it wrong on the test.
Oh, honey, that was just an article from an old biased newspaper. I was there, and you can trust me. Oh, what are they going to teach you next? These Common Core lessons are awful.
Learn more about the Federal Common Core and PA Core standards and call your representatives today and ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to knowpacommoncore.com or call Richard at 484-678-2236. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message.
Without God, liberty will not last. A quote from Thomas Jefferson.
As stated by Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
In 1778, George Washington said in Valley Forge, "If having pleased the Almighty Ruler of the universe to defend the cause of the United States, and finally to raise up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth, to establish our liberty and dependence upon a lasting foundation, it becomes us to set apart a day of gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to His divine interposition."
The 2015 Commonwealth Prayer Breakfast will be held Tuesday, May 5th from 7 to 9 a.m. at the Radisson Penn Harris Hotel, 1150 Camp Hill Bypass in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. This year's breakfast theme is God Answers Our Prayers, and the featured speaker is Philip A. Clemens, Chairman of the Clemens Family Corporation and CEO of Hatfield Quality Meats. Mr. Clemens will share why God answers our prayers and how this has personally impacted his life journey. Cost for the breakfast is $25 per person, or $300 to sponsor a table of eight. Consider taking the time to join others in prayer on Tuesday, May 5th at this 2015 Commonwealth Prayer Breakfast. To reserve your spot by the April 30th deadline, or for event questions, contact Stephanie at 814-931-7841. That's 814-931-7841. 814-931-7841.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap Today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and of course, Sam Rohr and Dave Kistler and I are with you every day at this time, Monday through Friday, as we bring you a biblical and a constitutional view on the issues that we are facing in our nation today. And of course, today we want to talk about the riots that are taking place in Baltimore. We encourage each and every one of you to pray that other such riots will not happen across this nation. We understand that there have been some threats that they would occur. We pray that they will not. But today we are delighted to have with us a veteran policeman in a major American city, not Baltimore, I will make that clear. But his name is Ed Stevens, and Dave Kistler, you've been a friend of Ed for many, many years. Why don't you introduce him to our audience here this afternoon?
Well, Gary, I am delighted to do that. Ed has been a friend for many, many years. He has labored with us in our crusades in Washington, D.C., and in other things that we have done in our nation's capital. And there's not a greater friend I have anywhere on the planet than Ed. I respect him greatly. His years of expertise, or his years of experience, rather, give him a unique expertise when it comes to law enforcement. So I thought it would just be great to have him on today to talk about what's been going on in the Baltimore area. And Gary, if I could, I want to just jump into the first question after welcoming Ed to the program. Ed, it's great to have you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here, brother, and congratulations on the expansion of the program.
Well, it's an exciting thing for us, and we are just thrilled that you can be a part of it. And as Gary said earlier, we want you to be able to be on many, many times in the days ahead, because we're going to have more of these situations that your insight will be very, very beneficial to our listening audience. Let me just ask you this, Ed. There's been some reports that have been coming out claiming that Freddie Gray, the gentleman over which these riots in Baltimore have basically erupted because of his death, his tragic death, and I do want to say it is a tragic death. Anytime anyone dies, whether it's while they're in police custody or not, it's a tragedy. But this gentleman was arrested. We don't know all the reasons why they took him into custody. We're beginning to have some indications of why they may be arrested him, but all the information's not fully out. But in the back of that van, he sustained some kind of an injury to his spinal column. We've heard the numbers, 80% of his spinal cord was severed. The reports that are coming out are saying that perhaps he had been in an accident, that there is some type of a lawsuit with Allstate Insurance because of a car accident he had, and that he sustained a very severe spinal injury. He had had several spinal fusions that were unsuccessful, and perhaps as much as a week and a half prior to his death, he had had another spinal fusion surgery. Others are saying, no, that's not the case. But either way, Ed, my question is this. Whether he had an injury that that precipitated his death or whether he didn't, what could have possibly happened in the back of that paddy wagon that could have resulted in these kind of injuries, and whether he sustained an injury prior to the day of his death and he was dealing with a spinal fusion situation or whether he wasn't, are the police in that situation, are they going to be, in your estimation, held liable for his death?
Well, if the facts come out and it's true that he had a pre-existing condition, you cannot expect the police officers to know that. They're not psychic. If their contact with him came in the course of an official investigation or authorized operations, be it counter-narcotics or whatever, and they had reasonable suspicion to approach him, detain him, then the liability should be removed because police operate under a good faith doctrine. As long as they were operating in good faith and not with malice, not with racial bias or anything like that, then they were doing their jobs. They can't be expected to know that he had some kind of an injury. The accusations of a possible rough ride to jail are just irrelevant. I've never seen a prisoner van with seat belts inside the prisoner transport compartment, and I don't know how Baltimore's vehicles are set up. I will say this, that violent prisoners will often go unbuckled because of the fight it takes to get them into the vehicle, and all you can try to do is get them inside the vehicle and get the door closed and contain them. So it's going to come back to the pre-existing conditions being unknown, and I just seriously doubt that type of an injury occurred inside the van. Obviously, I know nothing about the contact or the extent of the struggle to take him into custody and place him under arrest. But those things, as usual, the public and the media don't wait for those facts to come out, because that doesn't draw attention. It doesn't draw an audience. It requires patience, and it requires objectivity. So we're back to the same thing that we talked about after the Michael Brown situation in Ferguson.
You know, Ed, you mentioned something there, and of course you are able to mention things like this because of your experience. And that is about the seatbelts that are in the paddy wagons, as it were. You know, it would be very, very dangerous, I would think, if a policeman would try to put a seatbelt or something around a, a serious, dangerous criminal. I mean, you know, to bend over to do that or to strap them in, you know, the criminal could reach down and literally somehow put a head hold or something around the policeman and then make the circumstances even a whole lot worse. I never thought about that.
Yes. And if it was a what we call a paddy wagon or a prisoner van, it's made up of usually two or possibly three separate compartments, and you simply have the arrestees step up in there. Hopefully the officers followed proper procedures and had him have the prisoners with their hands cuffed behind their back, because if they're cuffed in front, you may as well take the handcuffs off. So that also goes back to basic small unit leadership that you know you hope you have with professional police officers, and the level of professionalism is going to vary from department to department, and even from district to squad. It just shines the light on how important it is to have upstanding, ethical, professional, well-trained young men and women. And contrary to some of the comments that were made even by the president, I don't think there's an issue of any retraining that needs to go on. You can't train people. You can't legislate morality. You know, you have to require competence and demonstrated intelligence when you hire people. So there are a number of issues that come into the question.
I know Sam has a question to ask, but I just want to bring this up to you, Ed, and that is that I'm guessing that this type of a situation where we've had attacks on police and accusations against police over these last months and year or so, it must really affect day-by-day police work, does it not?
Oh, tremendously. Absolutely kills morale. And believe me, when you're out there dealing with criminals in a high-crime area, in an area where you're not wanted, you're not respected, and if you drop your guard, you just might catch a bullet, you need to have morale. You know, the thing about this situation is there was no police shooting involved. It happened in a city with minority majority representation. In other words, the vast majority of the people in charge in the police department and the city government are African Americans. But it cannot be overemphasized how expansive the impact is on everyday police departments and on the individual officers. I can only speak for where I'm at. We're short hundreds of police officers, short, and not a whole lot of money is being committed to hiring new officers. Nothing close to enough to offset retirements or those that are quitting. And I teach a criminal justice class at a local university, and this, of course, will affect young people in their desire to become police officers, because they're eventually going to reach the conclusion that it's just not worth the risk. Go do something that doesn't involve so much personal risk.
Sam, I'm sure you have a question you'd like to bring up at this time, even though our segment is short here. Let's hear from you, sir.
Well, no, I do. Ed, just briefly, I mean, you're talking about the fact that many officers believe they can't do right. They're guilty if they do right. Sometimes they're guilty if they do wrong. Do you think that that the delayed response, that we'll talk about more of that when we get back here, but the delayed response a little bit by the department there in Baltimore, was it all impacted by the fact that they were somewhat paranoid and afraid of what was going to happen? I'm going to turn back to you, Gary, right now, because I know we got to go to a break. But maybe on the other hand, Ed can come back and answer that.
Yeah, we'll hear from Ed when we come back. You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. On behalf of Sam Rohr and David Kistler, I'm Gary Dahl. Don't go away. We'll be back with more right after this.
Chances are there'll never be an emergency ever again. But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
Who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. In a speech about criminal justice reform, Hillary Clinton says we need to talk about reducing the prison population. And with incidents between police and civilians like in Baltimore,
let's remember that everyone in every community benefits when there is respect for the law and when everyone in every community is respected by the law.
She spoke at Columbia University in New York. The economy is pretty much at a standstill.
GDP, gross domestic product, broadest measure of the economy, it was expected to slow in the first quarter, but not this much. The economy only grew 0.2%. That was slower than the full 1% economists had predicted. And today is day two of the Fed meeting. They'll come out with their statement mid-afternoon, but with this GDP slowdown, they may not raise rates anytime soon.
Fox Business Network's Tom Sullivan on Wall Street. The Dow is down 155 points. Fox News.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead, were the words of Admiral David Farragut, who captured Mobile, Alabama, and on this day, April 29, 1862, captured New Orleans. Under tremendous fire, he breached the heavy chain cable that stretched across the Mississippi and led his ships up the channel filled with mines called torpedoes. The loss of New Orleans was a major disaster for the South, as it was the Confederacy's largest city. During his last illness, David Farragut, the Navy's first four-star admiral, asked for a clergyman to pray to the Lord for him, saying, "He must be my pilot now."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, today we are talking about the rioting that's taking place in Baltimore, Maryland. And we have on with us today a veteran policeman. His name is Ed Stevens, and he has a lot of answers, a lot of wisdom, a lot of insight as to what's going on in Baltimore. And before we went into the hard break, Brother Sam, you'd ask a very pertinent question. Why don't you repeat that question, and Ed, then, of course, you can answer it if you would, please.
Okay, thank you very much, Gary. Yeah, Ed, a lot of people have looked there at that circumstance in Baltimore and say, all right, well, we see all that this has happened now, all the burning that transacted and so forth. Why was there such a delayed response? Now, I'd like to ask from a police perspective, Was it a police issue that they did not respond? Were they possibly afraid if they responded too quickly they were going to be accused of doing something? Or were there other things that factored into that? Just what's the normal protocol response by a police department in a circumstance like this?
Well, it's going to be under civilian control, and those orders come from the mayor. And in one short interview that I saw earlier today, I think, she did indicate that they wanted to approach it carefully, and a so-called measured response. And what that got them is, you know, hundreds of vehicles burnt and millions of dollars in property destroyed. And that is unacceptable. I would describe the response, the command decision that led to the response as nothing short of atrocious. You know, people need to understand that elected officials and police executives are paid significant sums of money to anticipate events. They are expected to anticipate events, allocate and deploy resources, police resources, as well as other resources, ahead of the threat and reduce the threat to the public. That's their primary duty. And that duty was not met. When you have 15 to 20 police officers injured, that is unacceptable. And as a perfect couple of perfect examples of how it should have been done, look at the situation in South Carolina where the officer shot the fleeing subject in the back. The police department's action was decisive and immediate. They immediately suspended the officer, fired him, and then the local district attorney charged him with murder, and that prevented an outrage, and it would have been a justifiable outrage, apparently. Another example was 10 or 11 years ago in South Florida, something called the FTAA, the Free Trade of the Americas Agreement meeting was held. And I happen to know that a vast amount of preparation for months in advance of that was conducted, and the protesters and even the so-called anarchists that came from that went from out from other areas of the country to South Florida with the intent of fomenting riots and civil disobedience were completely quashed, to the point that there were complaints that they were frustrated that they didn't have the chance to supposedly voice their concerns. Well, you know, there's a big difference between freedom of speech and what you saw in Baltimore. I could go on for hours about it, but in the bottom line is the mayor must be held accountable. The mayor calls the shots. Politicians always seem to look for the credit when things go well, but then they want to avoid the blame when things don't go well. So she should either be impeached or indicted, and the entire police command staff should be fired because the response was atrocious and a breach of the public trust that the citizens of Baltimore placed in them.
Ed, what you just said about what happened there in South Florida brings up a question that I really want to ask you. You talked about agitators coming in South Florida from the outside, and just from your professional perspective, understanding, police work inside and out, how much do you believe of what happened in Baltimore was local people that were upset, agitated, versus those that came in from the outside? I know there was a report yesterday that said that there was some social media similarity, activity on social media that indicated the same people that were outsiders in Ferguson, Missouri were also involved in Baltimore. Based on what you saw from your professional perspective, how much of that do you believe that happened over the last several nights in Baltimore was outside agitators and had nothing to do with Freddie Gray, nothing to do with the local citizenry?
Well, the entire response had virtually nothing to do with Freddie Gray. That's just a pretext. And again, just like we had it in Ferguson, all the reports do show that the social media played a big part of it, even calling for a purge at 3 o'clock when they, I guess they went into a local mall. And behind this, that whole push is nothing short of anarchy, a complete rejection of democratic principles. And why do they do that? Why do they reject the democratic principles that our nation is built on, that our criminal justice system is founded upon? Because they want to continue to force concentration of power in one person's hands. Who do you think that one person is? That's the question that should be asked. Who is that one person? There were additional reports that a person by the name of Malik Shabazz was involved. He may have led the group to incite the civil disobedience, the outright violence. As you mentioned, multiple Twitter feeds that also occurred in Ferguson, Missouri. And I don't know anything about Twitter. I don't know how that works, but that supposedly is the result of a digital investigation of the source of Twitter feeds. So it plays a big part of it. And then lastly, the thing you have to ask yourself, the thing is, if you really want to know what's behind it all, is these outside agitators and these so-called professional protesters and anarchists, where does their money come from? Always follow the money. Where does their money come from? And I think if you look into that, you can have a better understanding of why this happened and why people from outside of Baltimore were involved and may have elevated the level of discontent.
I've got two questions here, actually, for you, Ed. And they're not necessarily on the positive side, I guess, but I think they're questions that we need to deal with. You talked about where does the funding come from? Who is behind all of this kind of a thing financially? Al Sharpton is not the most upright guy in America, and it has nothing to do with his color. But amongst the police, the professional police departments and the professional policemen across this nation, is there some suspicion that he or his organization could in one way, shape, or form be behind something like this?
Well, I don't know if there's a widespread belief that he's behind it, but the evidence and the continual pattern of evidence is consistent that he always seems to show up and tries to take a leadership position in issues that, of course, he knew nothing about before they happened. But as soon as the television cameras are and microphones are there, he's there. And enough has been said about him in the news about his legal problems, and apparently he's very averse to paying taxes. And it goes back to character. And who these so-called communities in the state, and I don't like that generalization, but it's constantly passed off as the black community, as if that's one single entity, and that is simply completely incorrect. But the black community, if it is a single entity, needs to reconsider who they look up to as their leaders and their spokespersons.
Sam, do you have a question at this point, please?
Well, Gary, back on that, I'm just going to ask you direct out here, Ed. We know, and it seems to be, that social media, these kinds of things by, as you put it, professional anarchists, so forth, outside of these circumstances, are playing an increasing role. And I guess we're going to have to be breaking here just a minute, but I'd like you to come back on the other side then of this, and I'd like to hear from you. What is it that police officers are thinking are a part of this? Gary brought up one fellow, but where's this coming from? Do you have any ideas of who and why they're up to this?
seems like every time Sam speaks, music happens. So that means we've got to take a break, folks. We will be back with more right after this. Stay tuned.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Every year in the months of March through June, lobbyists are swarming the Pennsylvania Capitol building, and there are frequent rallies and demonstrations, sometimes multiple times a day. It's all because it's budget time, and special interests are looking for their piece of the pie, or should I say, our tax dollars. And so it was last week when Planned Parenthood bussed in demonstrators to demand even more money from the state for their activities. They already get millions, and it's only reasonable to believe that those dollars eventually end up promoting their biggest activity, which is abortion. We don't think Planned Parenthood should get any tax dollars, which is why we took to the Capitol last week to expose the truth about Planned Parenthood and abortion in Pennsylvania. You can find out more by downloading our special report at the website abortionispersonal.com. That's abortionispersonal.com. And you can find out about us at pafamily.org.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. I want to remind you that freedom of speech is not free. Courageous radio stations like this one need your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show. Talk radio is America's immune system, but it needs your support. If you're a business, it makes sense for you to advertise with this station. Here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio formats would generate. Well, why is that? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the shows that they love. If you're a business and you want to grow, advertise on this station. And if you're a listener, of course, do business with the businesses that advertise in my show and on others on this station.
For more information on how you can advertise your business on News Talk 1180 WFYL, call 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, to protect freedom of speech. God bless America.
With God's hand upon him, Nehemiah pursued the impossible. Rebuild broken walls, repair burned gates, restore a lost national identity. But Nehemiah had what few leaders have, a vision bigger than himself and a faith in God that wouldn't waver. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. At PPN, we encourage pastors to set their vision high, focus on God's calling and God's equipping, and boldly lead their people forward. Whether opposed by people, circumstances, or discouragement, Nehemiah did what godly leaders do. He went to his knees in prayer. He repented for his sins and the sins of the people. He beseeched God to hear the prayer of his servants who feared his name. Then he encouraged the people to work. Despite the opposition, the walls were rebuilt, gates repaired, identity found, and the worship of God restored. And you can do the same. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network.
Sign up as a partner and learn more about us at papastors.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, Sam, we'll go right to you again and see if you can speak without having music play behind you.
We can do it real quick. Ed, you've had a few minutes to think about that. But going right to the heart of it, we've known a social media involvement. We know that there seems to be professionals who are wanting to encourage the kind of action that we've seen in Ferguson, that we've seen in Baltimore, that many are saying that we can expect to see at other places across this country within law enforcement. Where are our eyes going? What's the thinking process? And you have any idea of who and why this is type of thing is being encouraged from the outside?
It's a societal thing. As you know, our society just continues to get increasingly secular and thus becomes a rudderless ship that gets blown with the winds this way and that. And the real root cause behind the social media phenomena and what's going on in large urban areas like Baltimore is the consequences of a liberal utopian deception. We've had 6 years with an African-American president and virtually or no improvement, in fact, even worsening in the economic conditions in the black community. I've heard statistics like something close to 25% unemployment for working-age African-American men. And then to add to that, as we've talked about for years, you have the breakdown of family and the breakdown of morals. And that has consequences. That has consequences. You know, the reaction in Ferguson was based completely on lies, and in this case in Baltimore, it's based on preconceived notions. People are just deciding that the police are at fault. A lot of what's been said by politicians, up to and including the White House, wants to place the blame squarely on law enforcement, and behind that is a push to legalize drugs and say that drug dealers are not criminals, and where that can go to is your guess is better than mine. I don't see any way that it can lead to anything productive or constructive for the people that live in Baltimore. You've got these ideological agitators like Malik Shabazz, and who's behind that? The Nation of Islam. You've got far too many pastors in inner city churches preaching black liberation theology, which gives no one any hope, and it certainly doesn't include the gospel of Jesus Christ. So, my goodness, it's a complex problem with a number of different areas contributing to it. I could go on and on, but you can see that there's just a number of deep-rooted things behind it. And if you just focus on police and how police are deployed, or how what percentage of their police force is a minority, you're just going to miss the ball completely.
Ed, let me ask this question. I know we got just a couple of minutes to go. Based on what we have seen in Baltimore, Maryland, this out-of-control violence, I mean, it's unthinkable that a great American city like Baltimore, and by the way, my daughter and son-in-law lived there about a year ago, and I've been back and forth with them just thanking God, talking with them, saying, praise God that you've not been there through this. And by the way, they lived less than a mile from where a lot of this took place. So I have a real vested interest in this. But based on all of this that we're seeing go on, this out-of-control violence in a city like Baltimore, long-term, what can be done, what must be done, Ed, to stop this kind of stuff?
First, there must be no tolerance for violence toward police officers. You need to understand that police officers should have the expectation of going to work every day and then coming home with the same amount of skin and bones and teeth as they had when they went to work. Plain and simple. no tolerance for violence towards police officers. I was watching that video of the kids throwing rocks and bottles, and that required an immediate, overwhelming response. You had tolerance for the destruction of private property. The mayor of Baltimore even said that she thought that giving the protesters room to destroy would somehow short-circuit the violence. That is absolute insanity. Secondly, you need to eliminate the elimination of the politicization of police forces. Okay? You've got to eliminate the politicization of police forces. It needs to be based on sound doctrine and good hiring practice. Parents raising their own kids and not expecting the state to do it. I mean, for how many years have we been talking about that? And that something like 80 to 85% of all young black babies are born outside of wedlock. They have no father in the home, or they don't have a two-parent home. We're seeing the results and the consequences of that. Churches need to take the rightful place in society and push back against the constant compromise and secularization of religion. Churches have to take back their rightful place in society and stand up and preach righteousness. The education pendulum must swing back towards the center, and being an educator, obviously I see that with my own eyes. The overt liberalism, Darwinism, rejection of creation as an alternative to the theory of evolution must end. It absolutely must end. We've got an entire generation that thinks that creationism is some kind of a wild joke. Inner city youth must be taught factual American history and not blame America first civil rights history. They're not being taught to have any concern for or value for the greatness of America. With all of our imperfections, we're still the greatest country to ever exist on the face of the earth. And so many youth, especially in the inner city schools, are being taught that the civil rights movement of the 1960s is about the only thing there is to talk about in American history. And this is just crucial. You know, you've got to begin properly educating young people, and then the churches and the pastors, like yourselves, gentlemen, have got to proclaim the gospel without apology, emphatically, and constantly, to try to reach people's hearts with the truth of the gospel. And as we know, only the truth will set you free.
That's right. And, of course, we want to thank you, Ed Stevens, for being with us on Stand in the Gap today. We will continue to pray for you as you continue to serve as a policeman in a major city in America. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great day. Until next time, I'm Gary Dahl saying stand up for faith and freedom. Keep looking up. Watch God work. And remember, the best is yet to come.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.